Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
By the fifth episode, we just started getting really weird. I think I was naked in Al Snow's house by the fifth episode.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to OVW Overdrive, the show that always kicks out of two. I'm Detective Brian Kennison.
I've been at Davis Arena for 5 days. I haven't used the bathroom while awake for 4 days. I've eaten 3 mice, but I figured it out, Steven.
Daniel, tell them you're putting the gauntlet down, you're ready for all comers, and you've been very impressive thus far. I see you holding on to that title for a long time.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm not worried about it at all.
And I'm not saying like I'm scared of you.
You should be scared.
Okay, this one's from YouTube. OVW's these days is not near as good as commentators of the past. When did you put Dean Hill's genitals on commentary? Their words are like farts to my ears.
That's more offensive than the...
I don't know how he got that many characters. Oh, it's YouTube. That's why.
Yeah, it's not Twitter.
That's
genuinely, from the bottom of both of our stupid idiot hearts. Thank you.
Brian. The baby.
Now arriving on Cultaholic Island, it is the voice of OVW, Brian Kennison. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing lovely, Tom. Thanks for having me on your beautiful island, I must say. It looks a lot like my home, which is very inviting.
We made your room look exactly like your room, your office in your home. A great
Tom,
expense.
I was just telling you, I feel like you and I couldn't actually cross paths because we've been having trouble with scheduling. And
if
we did, it would break the simulation. You say you created a replica of my home? That just adds to the... I really feel like this simulation thing, I might be onto something now.
Here's the thing, if you're listening to this at home. Here's the thing. Brian and I have been trying to get this interview together. I think probably since the first appearance of Veer Mahan... And I'm upset that Veer came before you and I got to record this.
You know, the universe, sometimes the dominoes got to fall. And it was like, you know, not before Veer, but right after. So like, it had to happen. He had to come first.
Veer always comes first.
Or 50th or 100th or 150th. The man came. That's all that matters. He came
and we all rejoiced. We're off the back of WrestleMania weekend. It's been a fun old time. You were telling before we started, you had yourself a little garden party for it, which sounds like a lovely time.
It was beautiful. So it was just going to be me and the wife because, you know, there's a couple, like, with OVW, it's hard for me to even keep up with wrestling as much as I used to because there's just so much to do. So I didn't even know really all the backstory going into it. I was like, I really hope I enjoy this. You know, it's like going to see a movie that you've seen 10 seconds of a trailer of. You hope for the best. You know, some of the actors. So not only did we end up watching it, it'd be really good. It ended up being fantastic. It kind of escalated because Tony Gunn, OVW former heavyweight champion, Tony Gunn and his wife ended up coming over. And then we had a couple of other friends that kind of reached out, like, you guys doing anything? I was like, well, apparently we are. So we ended up having an impromptu gathering of like wrestlers and comedians, kind of combining my two worlds, and it ended up being a great time. And I really proud of myself. I built a fire pit impromptu too, like, because we're going to have people over. I was like, babe, I'm going to build a fire pit. And it was, I was really proud of myself.
Look at you go. Yeah.
Tony Gunn had to help with the actual fire. A bit, but I was there and I supervised.
You were the best supervisor of that fire pit, Brian.
It couldn't have been made without me looking over his shoulder.
Want to talk a lot about the OVW family that you were with over WrestleMania weekend in a little bit, but we are here, Brian, because we needed to build another fire because we're stranding you on Cultaholic Island. And
what a transition.
I know, right? Thank you.
Software.
And thank you so much. Thank you. And whilst you are there, you're going to have three wrestling matches to watch to keep you entertained, among other things. But we're going to go throughout the interview your three matches that you would choose to watch whilst you are there. So, Brian, what would you like your first match to be?
Okay, so I'm gonna tell you this is probably gonna be anticlimactic because there's no 5-star matches on this. I don't think there's a single Tope Suicida. Well, now there is a Tope Suicida, but they're more personal choices because it's my
this, good.
You know, I get three for the rest of my life. It's got to mean something.
That's the whole thing about this. I always worry that sometimes people get bogged down in they need to be the best matches. Well, no, they're matches that mean something to you and have some sort of personal reflection on you. So that's good. I'm glad there's no 5-star, and I'm glad that they all mean something to you.
Exactly, and that's the thing. If it's only a three, wrestling is supposed to make you feel something. It's supposed to make you react to it. So these are three that got me. So the first one is one of my favorites: John Cena versus Brock Lesnar, SummerSlam 2014.
Oh, now am I? This is the what? This was amazing. This is the night that John Cena gets basically battered into a fine powder.
Yeah, it's a 15-minute massacre, and it's good from the shock. Because I remember watching it, just my jaw hitting the floor. Like, I can't believe they did that. But now being part of the sport and being behind the production of it, all of it is just beautiful. I mean, you got Cena, because every time he gets that little bit of hope spot, Lesnar very convincingly is that monster who shuts it down. I mean, from the when he comes at him, fist roll, and you hear the crowd pop up like, okay, this is when he turns it around. But then he doesn't. And then he gets the FU or the attitude adjustment. And they're like, okay, this is when he turns around. Was it? And then he got up and laughed at him. And you see Cena fall apart as Lesnar's laughing at him. And you get the one kid in the background going, let's go, Cena. And it's one kid.
Oh.
The commentators, it's all hushed tones at points. Like, I can't, this from the opening bell. You know, it's like from every bit of it just was exactly what it needed to be. And it sucked you in. Like, I watched it sometimes and still be like, they really didn't expect that, but I know they did, but it's just that's the point, you know what I mean?
I didn't expect that it to be such a one-sided drumming. I really didn't, and I like that in only really in recent memory WWE have got braver with doing stuff like this, because historically, like, you know, you watch stuff from the 80s and the 90s, it's the main event that has to do all the heavy lifting. You have to have your broadways for the main event. You have to have those 45 minutes to an hour epics in the 80s, and then in the 90s it would still be the lion's share of the night would belong to the main event, even if, you know, the main event couldn't really go the lion's share. I'm looking at you, Diesel and Mabel.
How dare you? He's a king.
But here's the thing with those two, on a slight tangent, is that Diesel and Mabel stank the joint out at SummerSlam 95, like 20 years before the match that you've chosen. And then on the last Raw of 1995, they do Diesel versus Mabel, and it lasts 10 seconds. And it's Diesel just jumping Mabel, hoofing him in the face with a big boot and pinning him. And I was like, if that had been the SummerSlam main event, that would have been spectacular. But they weren't at a point to do that. But at this point, you had, Brock Lesnar dominate and decimate. I'm trying to think in terms of hope spots from that match that you mentioned. I think that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because this is your match. I think there's maybe two.
Yeah, man, there's like two to four. Because I know he got the FU. He got this mid shots, and he got the I can't even remember what his submission is called.
The
SDFU in. So he got at least three, but every time, that's the thing, because you heard that crowd just in what they're trained to do, and that reaction to, oh, here, John's going to come back. And he didn't. And not only that, he looked embarrassed afterwards. And such a tasty, like, everything landed, and Lesnar laughing at him and Cena just his face melting.
I think if Lesnar hadn't been sort of galvanized as the final boss of wrestling at WrestleMania 30 when he beat The Undertaker, I think that did it. But then they kind of went back a couple of paces because they had Survivor Series where Goldberg turned up and beat him in like a minute and a half. I was like, okay. Yeah. But again, it's that bravery to go, we're going to put on a main event that's 90 seconds long. But it's going to make perfect sense. I wouldn't want Goldberg and Brock to go more than 90 seconds. I think that's the adequate amount of time for them.
It didn't go well the first time. Didn't go super great the first time. And, you know, those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And I think Vince is like, no, pal, I think 90 seconds is fine.
Yeah, keep those matches super short. So a lot of these matches, a lot of the matches that we choose on the Desert Island Graps, there's something about where you were at the time that always rings a bit true. So where was Brian when this was going on? Where were you watching?
Man, that was it was a very different Brian at a very different time. I was living in a studio apartment. I think I was working at GameStop at the time. I just quit doing stand-up comedy, and I didn't really know what I was going to do next. So I was kind of at a really weird crossroads. But that actually, I will say to that end, that's probably a time I dug into wrestling a lot more than usual. It's a comfort thing. It's something I could watch and enjoy and lose something. I know it's corny or, you know, overstated to say that at this point. But yeah, thanks for bringing it up, Tom. I hadn't thought about it. But yeah, it was a low point, but wrestling was one of those things that I could lose myself in. And maybe that's why seeing something like that, knowing something, I was seeing something out of the norm or breaking that wave. Maybe that's something that stuck with me. I need to talk to my psychologist probably about that.
You can talk to me, it's fine. But there is something about, no, I hear you on the escapism front, because that was wrestling for me for a long time was escapism. It was having something that could take you out of whatever was going on around you, that you could lose yourself in. And it still is. It's even though now, like for you and myself, it's the job. I can only speak for myself, so I'll ask you the question. Like, obviously your WrestleMania weekend, you've just had kind of answered that question, but do you still feel like you can lose yourself in wrestling the same way that you did with the Brock and Cena match?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a little different now because being behind the curtain, I can't help also look at production, but like I said, in the Lesnar Cena match, that helped me appreciate it more from a different standpoint. But when we knew CM Punk was coming back to AEW, when Daniel Bryan, we knew was rumored to be showing up in AEW, me, Tony Gunn, Dance's Stevie J, my co-partner at the desk. I mean, those things still, as if you're a wrestling fan, can excite you, and you can take yourself out of, oh, this is what we get paid to do. And you can live in that moment and breathe in that moment. Like, cause you've had those small bits of those moments. You know, I've had like a steak on a toothpick version of those moments. Be able to sit there though and watch someone get the full meal on television. You can respect that and appreciate it and almost feel it in a different way. But yeah, you can still lose yourself in a very different sort of way. It's like, I don't watch the Hall of Fame because I feel like it's an office party I wasn't invited to, so I can't sit there and watch it.
That's a good description, actually.
But in a positive way, that's how I feel about watching someone really get that full stake. You know what I mean? It's the exact opposite of, this is an office party I'm not allowed to go to. It's I'm watching someone really achieve their dream, really grab that brass ring, pal. Like, I'm really seeing that escalation knowing what it feels like on a small version. It really makes you feel appreciated for that person all the more, if that makes sense.
It does. When did you first get into wrestling?
Like as a fan or as a
worker? As a fan.
Oh, gosh, man. I can remember being tiny, tiny with little Frankfurter fingers, playing with the old LGN figures. My mom's boyfriend had a bunch of the old ones, so I can remember playing with those. I remember specifically an Andre the Giant, who his little dog had like bitten half the head off of. But I was like, still, bringing Andre the Giant, fantastic. So I've always been a peripheral knowledge. I would say when I really dug my teeth in, I really started diving in, NWO was starting to happen. There was the Monday Night Wars were starting to happen. The moment that stuck to me was WrestleMania headline Stone Cold and Shawn Michaels, which we might talk about that again later. But it was that WrestleMania specifically that dug its teeth in. I was like, all right, this is it. This is fantastic.
Were there other people around you at that time, friends, family members that were wrestling fans too?
It was a friend actually asked me. He's like, hey, you we're gonna watch WrestleMania at my uncle's. Do you want to come over? And I was like, I know of WrestleMania. I really enjoy what I know of wrestling, again, peripherally. I was like, so yeah, sure, let's dig into it. And the 64 games at the time did not hurt. Did not hurt at all to help introduce, you know, even if you weren't accustomed to it, you knew at that point you had some introductory knowledge. So I go over to this guy's, this house. It was, I'm not going to lie to you, it was a crappy house. But it was one of those things where that everything around me went away as the pay-per-view started happening. Because you had Terry Funk and Cactus Jack versus the New Age Outlaws. You had Triple H, you had The Rock, you had X-Pac. It was a great. No, X-Pac was the next time. My apologies. It's over New Age Outlaws. It's indie. My apologies. Anyway, you had it. It was just such a good WrestleMania. And I remember this dingy house around me going away and just being sucked into this TV, and especially that last sequence, Stone Cold, Tyson, Shawn Michaels. It was just one of those moments where everything worked.
N64 games you mentioned there. Are we talking Warzone, Attitude, Revenge, or No Mercy?
Obviously, we start with Revenge. We're starting with the WCW game. We'll start with World Tour.
Okay. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can go back and play now, and I'm like, I don't know a good chunk of these people. Some of these are clearly made up. But then, like, knowing some of the names, but then knowing the other names are, like, people I should probably never have heard of, fascinated me. I was like, this guy is out there somewhere living his life in Tokyo. And I'm this little kid in Kentucky playing the same on the 64 game, which was a ton of fun. So that was what, obviously, so World Tour, then you got WCW, NWO, Revenge. But then, obviously, No Mercy. So 64, that's where it really got me. I wasn't a big fan of the PS1 options. Nothing on the PS1 really blew my hair back.
But No Mercy is iconic. And the fact that to this day, we still talk about it so fondly, I think speaks volumes.
Well, I think a big part of that, I mean, for me at least, was the creative character. How smooth and simple it was. It wasn't overbloated at the time, but you could still do enough. I made a blue version of Kane and gave him a different mask and called him Abel and created this own storyline.
I was about to ask you about your creator wrestlers, and we now know it was a blue Kane.
Yep. Abel.
Oh, sorry, Abel. I apologize. So that you made the storylines? Because again, like with this is something that I did as well with WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy. We didn't have like the story modes, so you had to write it down somewhere to keep track of everything. So you had Kane and Abel a tag team, or were they at odds with one another?
Oh no! I had Kane and Abel would appear during a Undertaker and Kane match as the third brother, obviously. Paul Bearer in tow, because I was young and I saw it happen with Kane. I was like, well, that's fantastic. Let's do that again. So yeah, that was kind of my thought there, is they would come out and actually have this, you know, brotherly feud to be a triple threat for a little bit, but eventually everybody comes together as one big happy family. That was my, that was my broken home dream, is that they all just eventually get along.
Was that played out through the wrestling games then? The dream
I want to thank you for the free therapy session I'm getting here that I didn't expect. Really working through some stuff. This is good.
Hey, you're very welcome. I'd like to thank you, because what's happened now is for the second week in a row on Desert Island Graps, we've had a fantastic wrestling commentator talking about the video game No Mercy. It is what we call a unident, an unusual incident, and it's happened beautifully in 2 weeks. So I'm proud of that. So thank you for making that come alive.
So maybe that's where the simulation started, Tom. That's where it all started, was when we all first played No Mercy.
It might do. It might do. Incidentally, should you ever bump into Tom Hannifin, start talking about No Mercy, and you guys will immediately get on.
He was one of my first fanboy Twitter experiences, actually.
Nice.
I'm a mark, man. I am what I am. We wouldn't be in the business if we weren't. You know what I mean? Like, why would you be in a business of something you didn't enjoy? Enjoy what you enjoy. But I saw him at a small NXT show in like a nowhere Indiana. And I wasn't expecting him. And I saw him walk out. I was like, oh, hey, that's Tom Phillips. Yeah. And I was like the only person that I tweeted about it. I was like, I just saw Tom Phillips. He got super excited. So I'm assuming I'm like one of 10 tweets he got that night at this nowhere house show. Then he liked it and retweeted it. I was like, look at me go.
What a guy. I like that a lot. When you were you discovered wrestling and through the video games and watching in 98, you were falling in love with it. What was the plan at this point for young Brian? Because I know you went to University of Louisville, and what was the hopes coming at the other end of university? What were you hoping to do?
I don't think I was ever in school to do something I should be in. Like, I went to school just because that's what you're told to do. You know, I think it was hammered in my head. You go to school, get married, you have kids, you die. It's like, oh, well, that's a pretty easy schedule to remember. And then somewhere in there, I was like, well, I don't necessarily like that schedule. And so we should mix that up a little bit. So I got into like acting in some crappy movies, which this is the simulation starting, or the domino starting to fall as they need to. And Al Snow killed me in a crappy B or D-list horror movie. F list. What's below F list? It was a terrible horror movie, but he killed me in it, and we met. So
what was the movie? You've got to tell us the movie.
It was called Hell House. I don't know if you know of rock star Ronnie Jonah. She was an independent wrestler for a little bit. She was in it as well. She's the Miz's ex-girlfriend. So,
nice.
But that had to happen. That had to happen for everything to happen later on. So I was in this crappy movie, which led to me doing crappy stand-up comedy for a long time. And I told you there was that dark period where I wasn't really doing anything creative, and it was kind of eating away at me where I was trying to do that. Get a job, go to school, get married, have a kid thing. And just it didn't feel right. And I think sometimes the universe pushes you in a certain way. When you're not going the right way, you just have to let it push you. So all of a sudden, I left GameStop. I ended up running into Dance and Stevie J. He talked about Ring of Honor one day. I was like, oh, let's talk about wrestling. We became buddies, started a podcast, had Al Snow on. It all just kind of went from there. So I got in school, there was really no end game. I think that was the problem, is I didn't see where I was going or where I could go. And then when I kind of let go of the wheel a little bit and kind of fell into things that felt right at the time, I kind of at least didn't have so much of an end game in mind. I could at least see the next step. And I think that's the point of getting out of the cave, is seeing the step in front of you.
What felt right about comedy at the time?
I thought I was funny, which helps.
You are funny. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm saying I was wrong.
That's okay then.
So I grew up before wrestling really took me over. I don't know if you remember, Comedy Central used to play SNL reruns all the time.
We had a little bit of that. Not so much. Not many places played Saturday Night Live here in the UK, but I'm pretty sure the Paramount Comedy Channel did for a little while.
Sorry, it's your lack of accent, Tom. That's what threw me off. I thought you were. And I love your accent. I'm ribbing you. We rib the ones we like.
You're too kind. No, I mean, we never got SNL like on the regular. I don't think it's even anywhere in the UK that plays it live or anything like that. The one thing I always noticed about SNL as a British person watching it, and I don't know whether it's because I'm too removed from it or whether I'm not in on the office party, to paraphrase, it's do you think that some of the sketches go on a bit too long?
Yeah.
I feel like they get to the joke really quick, and then there's like, well, we've still got 18 minutes here.
Yeah, well, that some of them, especially if you notice that towards the end of the show, the ones they keep on, those are the ones that are the staff love, and the first hour apparently the ones that the writers and the network love.
That's interesting. So it's this way you get the cross section of them. I'm with it.
So you get a little bit more of those ones that make you yawn towards the end, as I understand it. But that's where I thought I was going. Well, I thought I would do comedy, because I grew up before wrestling watching reruns of Saturday Night Live as a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, just watching them hours on loop. And so I feel like it gave me at least better timing, or at least gave me some inclination of what could be funny. And then getting into it, I think, is the same thing that's attractive about some people being a wrestler, is that immediate gratification. Because with comedy, you get joke response, and for your serotonin, that's fantastic. That feels wonderful. For wrestling, you know, you get body slam cheer, or boo, whatever you're going for. It's a response. It's immediate gratification on a very simple scale. And so I think combining seeing people do what I saw in my childhood that I really loved, and thinking I can actually do it, and then again, that sweet, sweet serotonin, a little bit of all of it.
So talk us through your first stand-up gig.
Actually involves rockstar Ronnie Jonah. I was working at the Improv Comedy Club as a server. I was working there, and we had open mic night. We didn't have enough people in the crowd to meet the demand for the servers we had. So I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to go home. And they had constantly asked me, like, cause I said I was interested. So the guy hosting, Danny Brown, he was always like, do you want to do it? I was like, oh, got to work. Well, work tonight, can't. So I'm literally going to leave, and Ronnie at the bar stops me. She goes, well, hey, you're not working tonight, you should go do it. And I was like, wow. I was about to leave, though, but then Danny walks up. He's like, oh, you're not working tonight, so you can do it. I guess I'm doing it. So I kind of got forced into my first time on stage. But after the Band-Aid was off, man, like, it was one of those things, like, okay, that went well and I didn't die. So I think I can do it again.
At that point, then, because obviously you weren't expecting to go on, had you got like some material already in your head? Had you got anything planned? Or did you think, I'm just going to go out there and shoot, brother, and we'll figure it out as we go?
No, I didn't go out there and shoot. I feel like now I can work the crowd better. I feel like I could, because I'm more Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm drinking my colas over here. Excuse me. I think I can work a crowd better now because I'm used to it in front of Davis Arena, and I'm a little more interactive in between the breaks, you know. But then there's no way I could have shoot because I was never like on stage in front of anybody. So I went with what I had in my head as a loose idea. And what I learned is if you talk slow, if you don't have much to say, you can still fill a lot of time.
And they always recommend anyway, and this is like a broadcasting thing, that normally if you feel like you're talking too slow, you're probably talking at the right speed.
Yep. And so well,
pipe that right back.
If you notice, I'm a classically fast talker, so much so that before I go out to TV, Doug Basham or Tony Gunn will write slow down on my hands in Sharpie. So you'll see some like ringside photos where I'm doing this. If you look close to my hand, it'll say slow down.
That's not a bad shout, because I do that sometimes when I'm on air. If I'm aware that I'm being loud or whatever, I'll have a little sign that says slow down or shut up or something to that effect, just to keep you right.
Right, you just need a little bit of reminder, because you'll literally hear me pull the break in the middle of the broadcast, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening right now. What a thing we are seeing. But I feel like if you're excited, sometimes you got to go a little fast, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, it's just, and this is the natural thing about working in a business that you love so much, is that you sometimes will get carried away with it. And I always find that I always have to pare back who and what I am in a lot of situations, because if I'm 100%, it's just too much for people. So I forever have to pair. I mean, case in point, the microphone that I'm using here, the Blue Yeti, the gain is always permanently on minimum. Because if it's even a slight, because I'm a gobshite, so if it's even slightly above that, then...
I'm stealing the term gobshite. I don't know what it means. I'm gonna
please do.
It
just means that you just talk too much or you talk too loud. Or gobshite is a great British word. I highly recommend gobshite. So therefore, I have to always have it on. So it's an allegory for life. So it's like you always have to be the volume. Yeah, always have to turn the volume down.
I'm using my very fancy laptop microphone. It doesn't have any settings. So
very fancy.
I like this tinny look, or this tinny sound. I feel like I'm getting.
You sound lovely. I wouldn't stress. But so you did your first gig. It went all right. You didn't die. How long did you do the comedy stuff for? How long did that roll on for?
I did it for years, actually. Yeah. And there was some success, but I probably could have pushed a little further, but I also was a single father at the time, so I had a lot of my time, especially weekends, devoted to that. But it went well. But what I noticed after a while, it wasn't so much about being successful as a comic. I got to start hosting my own open mic at a local comedy club. And I got to work there as like a special project manager, basically. So I got to work with local businesses to do special shows. But the big thing was the open mic, because I got to bring in new comics and I got to help nourish them and say, you know what, maybe try this, this, and this. And I got to see them grow and flourish. I mean, some fell by the wayside and that happens, but I got to see so many come into their own. There's like a lot that have actually went on to do more. There's Holly Lynn A, who's actually touring with Chelsea Handler right now. There's Ron Hirschberg, who's up in New York doing great things. Like, there's some great comedians that I got to see in these open mics go from being one thing to another. And that was really more gratifying than any success I was actually having. And there was a big rift in the comedy community at the time. There was a lot of people that didn't want to come back to the comedy club because the owner had besmirched them or they had issues. And if that, I made that my personal mission to bring those people back in. And that ended up, bringing in a whole new wave of comedians too. And that was the kind of stuff that I found was a lot more, I guess, gratifying than actually getting that pitch and response. You know what I mean? I did like hosting. I was a fantastic host. And I think that played into me being doing commentary. So I was a better host than I was comedian, but I mean host in the sense that I opened the show, but also host that I welcomed everybody that was on the show. It was important to me to shake everybody's hand and give you feedback on the set you did. It was more than just being a part of the show, it was building the show. And I think that's why being at OVW has been very gratifying as well, because I've got to take these guys under my wing that I see come, like Gustavo. I love Gustavo with my heart. Susie came in, I took the kid under my wing. I was like, I like you. Let's and I saw him grow and get better and better. Now he's rocking on NWA. Fantastic. Nothing to do with me. No success to me for that. But I love that kid. When he got bloodied on the scaffolding, like my shirt got covered in his blood because I carried him to the back. I love that kid. And now he's rocking it. And that feels better than anything else that I've, like, you know what I mean? Like, that feels better than if I would have got signed. It feels good to see him excelling like that. And that's kind of carried over from comedy. I think that was an eye-opening thing, that it's not about individual success. It's about building a community and seeing people thrive based on the community you built. You know what I mean?
And you've built an amazing community at OVW. You all have. And we want to get into that in a second. But let's do your second match before we go any further. So we had John Cena versus Brock Lesnar from SummerSlam for your first. What's your second one going to be, Brian?
Well, actually, I knew what I was going to say, and I spoiled it a little bit earlier, but now I feel like based on what I just said, it makes sense to tell you the other one. So the other one, this one's incredibly personal, and there's probably only a handful of people that actually saw it. It was Corey Storm versus Justin Smooth at an Impact show in Chicago. Those are probably two names you didn't know about or associate with OVW, because they're not there anymore. But again, this is a personal, this is my list.
Absolutely.
This was in 2019. It was about where one of the handful of months, several months after I got with OVW and really started ingratiating myself and making myself part of it. Impact was doing a big thing up in Chicago. They were having Sacrifice, I think it was. I can't remember exactly what show it was. It was really like a big, I think it was Bound for Glory, whatever it was. It was a big Impact show. But they also had like a side show they did the day before where they had a bunch of wrestlers from other promotions, like AC Romero was there, Ken Shamrock was there watching. Like, there was just a bunch of different wrestlers there, and OVW had a spot. And so I went up there with our head commentator at the time, Gilbert Corsi, and these two guys, Justin Smooth, and who was our champion at the time, and Corey Storm. And Corey, much like Gustavo, was one of those guys that I had kind of taken a personal ownership in, you know? And seeing him come in as like a smaller dude, a very small 19-year-old kid, and see that he worked his ass off to get to the main event, so much so that when OVW was asked to send two people in, they sent in Justin Smooth and Corey Storm. And not only that, they were the only ones that Justin Smooth got a microphone. Like, no other organization who had a match there got a microphone. So they were able to really tell a story. He came out and told Corey to lay down and all this kind of stuff. He's like, look, you're a kid. I'm the champ. And Justin Smooth is like 6'8", 6'9". He's like 280, 90 pounds. He's a big dude. So he's telling this kid to lay down. And Corey smacks him in the face. And they have a good match. I mean, Justin's in like dress pants. And they have a great match. And the story's really told. And that, for one, it meant a lot seeing Corey get to have that opportunity. So Justin Smooth, the same thing. Like, he was one of the first people that Steve and I worked with backstage on, like, promos and packages and working on how to talk and developing his character. So seeing those two really fully develop and come into their own to the point where OVW is like, these were our best. These are who we send right now to show what we're doing. Seeing those guys get that routine.
So I want to try and pinpoint people in the direction of this match. Is this match available where people can find it? Is this?
I don't think so. And I feel bad mentioning it.
No, don't feel bad.
I did make a highlight clip reel of it because that was one of the reasons I was there. I was getting footage for it because I wanted to put these guys over. So I can send you that. I don't know where it is like online, but I can at least send you that because tell like the complete story of it. And man, it was really gratifying seeing those guys do that, reach that level and reach that point. But at the same time, it's very cool for me as a fan that I got to poke around. You know, I got to actually shake hands with everybody. I had to talk to Josh Matthews like I meant to be there. Like, you know, have you heard of how Paul Heyman got involved? He was backstage.
He pushed in and said, oh, I'm a photographer. And he went in and took photos, didn't he?
Yep. And anything they're like, well, we need someone to do this. He's like, yeah, I could do that. Why couldn't I do that? I do that all the time. That's how I felt. Like, anything, I was there. I was like, I'm shooting promos. I'm like, hey, Josh, I'm going to do a video over here. He's like, okay. I was like, I got the badge, so it's okay. See? He's like, yeah, sure. I felt like that was my Paul Heyman moment. Like, I'm not a videographer. I'm not a cameraman. And that was me really stepping. I was the only director there too, like, and producer for OVW. So I really got to step into a different role that I've ran with since then and left to pry from my cold, dead fingers. But that was a really cool moment. And I got to take my now wife with me. That was the first time she really got to do a wrestling thing with me. Her and I went on that trip to Chicago. So it's something her and I'll always have as well.
How is your wife with the whole wrestling thing? Is she a fan?
I wouldn't necessarily say she's a wrestling fan, but I think she likes it more than she used to. But man, she's a champion. She's my best friend for one, but that's a whole different thing. I can spew about her all day. We're not going to get into that, Tom. We'll do that on our upcoming romance podcast.
Don't spoil the surprise.
Sorry. Oh gosh. Sorry. I told him what's in the box. No, she's incredible, man. Al told me very early on, because her and I got together a little bit after I was at OVW, and I told him things were going well. He's like, you need to make sure she's okay with this business. He's like, that's a big part of it. They can love you. They can love you endlessly, but they have to understand what this business is. He's like, that's a whole different type of person. And I think probably about a year and a half into it, maybe a little over, like we had filmed the OVW Christmas special in our den. Like, and she sat there with me and helped me set everything up, helped decorate the room. I was like, okay, yeah, I think she's a wrestling wife.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah. It is one of those things, man. When you know, you know. And I think that was one of those moments where she's never really hated wrestling. I think she's hated some of the scenarios that's put us in. But she's always been incredibly supportive. And I couldn't have gotten as far as I had without her. Like, we even did a carnival outside of Davis Arena. And she was right there with me trying to call sponsors, trying to get everything together. She's A+, man. She loves England. So you might run into us one day on the streets of England. So don't be surprised.
She's from England, you say?
No, she says she is. She loves England. She's a gigantic fan. Like, she, when, like, say, like, an American Express commercial comes up and they're like, you could travel to England. She'll go, oh. She wants to go back, man. She's desperate to go back. So sooner rather than later, you might see us popping around down there.
Whereabouts in England does she want to go?
Baby, where do you want to go? London.
It's always London.
Manchester.
Manchester's good.
Brighton. And our dog, she even named our dog Leeds, but we've been told that that is not a great area to visit.
Oh, Leeds is all right. It's all right.
Her dad was at a concert, and there was someone from London there, and they were like, oh, our daughter loves it. They've even named her dog Leeds. Like, Leeds? Have you been to Leeds?
Oh, but someone from London would say that. There's a weird north-south divide. So London kind of scoffs, and I'm a bit like, because I'm originally from the Midlands, so it's kind of got no association. It's kind of like border control, so it's neither the north nor the south. And when I moved up here, I feel you see like the distaste that sometimes the south will have for the north of England, and really? it's funny to be on the other side of it. Oh yeah, it's a class divide if anything else, but because. You say Manchester's one of the places. Leeds is fine. My good lady's from Yorkshire, so we know the area quite well. Newcastle upon Tyne's not a million miles away from Leeds either. So we're right at the top of the country.
The name fits him, man. He is a Leeds. I don't know. I've never been to Leeds, but the name fits him. By the way, I will be calling you Border Control Campbell from now on. I know I did Tom Bigelow before.
Tom Bigelow this is what you don't get when you listen. Like the DMs that Brian I've had since the first vignette of Veer Mahan arranging this. Yeah. We've gone through about 400 different nicknames.
Look at us, we've created such a banter and a rapport by not being able to have the show.
It's almost like we're friends. It's great. But if you come to the UK, we must bloody do drinks and hang out and all that jazz. We must
absolutely.
Do.
I gotta hear you without all the game. Now it's a thing. I gotta hear you without all the game.
There you go. You gotta do all that. Although, like, if you go to Manchester, great. If you go to Leeds, that'd be great. If you go to London, that'd be fine. Brighton's a bit far. But
again, you got standards, you got boundaries, and I won't push them.
That's a lot of traveling. So that's about 9 hours on the train, but it's be fine. It's much, UK is much, it's weird to say, it's much bigger in the UK, but then you're like, fun story that I have to fly to the next town in America. So I can't really complain when we're as big as we are.
We're big drivers a lot of times if we can, though, because we like to do our true crime podcast. Because I feel like we can solve it by the time we get to our destination.
Ah, that makes sense. I'm in awe of the indie workers in the US, because when I've had them on, they'll go like, we'll record in the morning because we've got an 18-hour drive today. And it's just like, geez, really? I'm going to shut up and never complain about having to sit on a train for 3 hours ever again.
Very intense, man. Very intense.
It's a long way to go.
Level X with Blanco Loco, Axon Ray, and Ellie, they will drive from Florida, literally drive from Florida up to Louisville. It's like a 16-hour drive. They'll do the show. They'll go to sleep for like 5 hours, and they'll drive another 5-6 hours to the next show. It's insane. Like, I applaud their work ethic. I really do. But as a 30-plus-year-old man, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. I'm tired seeing the itinerary, let alone doing it.
Right? I was tired saying 16 hours. 16 hours saying that took an hour off my life, and I know that.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's talk about OVW. So you got killed by Al Snow in a Z-list horror movie. You then got reacquainted with Al Snow on your wrestling podcast. Is the archive still available for the podcast, by the way?
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. It's still up. And you can actually trace the correlation of when we started working more at OVW and when the podcast kind of stopped.
When it disappeared. So when did the conversation turn to, hey, Brian, come and do stuff with OVW? Because you weren't behind the microphone immediately with OVW, were you?
No, far from it, man. I never expected to be a commentator. I never expected to, and it's never really a job I went for. So we did add Al on the podcast, and then Al doesn't really have a concept of time, and he'll tell you that happily. Like, he can remember a conversation and tell you everything you said, your body language, all that jazz, but he could not for the life of him tell you how long that conversation was. So we had this conversation, it was supposed to be like 20, 30 minutes, and I think we were on the phone for like 2 hours, to the point where I had to tell my boss, sorry for the long lunch, I was on the phone with Al Snow, and he's like, really? But after that conversation, I was like, I texted him, I was like, thank you so much for your time, I really appreciate it, it was great talking with you, I was like, it'd be a great to catch up sometime, just please time, don't murder me. He's like, yeah, great, stop by Davis Arena sometime and we can talk, be there tomorrow. So I stopped by, we talked, he just showed me around the arena, and I was like, I could, if you ever need help, I could possibly do this or that. And he's like, yeah, sure, come in, start coming in on TVs. So and I don't think he really had any idea of what I could do then. Al's just very open, if he likes you, he can find something for you. Or you, in my case, we found something for ourselves, because I left, I called Steve. Steve's my best friend and kind of my counterpart. I don't know if you've ever like kind of met somebody and at first and you're just like, okay, I can banter with this guy, I can roll with this person, it just kind of gels. I hated him at first. I saw his curly hair and I was like, this guy's gonna be my enemy. But I think that makes good friendships too.
I think there has to be that little level of animosity just right on the surface. A little bit.
And I appreciate that his tete-a-tete back with me was equalized. You know what I mean? Like, because in the world of comedy, you run into so many people that are so quick-witted that I don't want to say like it almost deludes you to anyone who can't be entertaining. Mm-hmm. But I think I hate saying that because it sounds very like, but I think it's more of a compliment to the people I've been around. Does that make sense?
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Your banter levels are at a relatively high point to start with. And you've kind of got to be up there. If they're not, then you don't suffer gladly, those who are under the line.
Exactly. I've reached a certain level of like expectation out of my banter. Yes. Like, which this is wonderful, by the way. You're right there, tit for tat. You know, to quote Marilyn Monroe, be whatever you want, but don't be boring.
to quote Marilyn Monroe, hang on, I've got to move because my dress is flaring up. That's a famous, famous phrase from Marilyn Monroe.
I like that. Well, I like that way. I think that, I use that in wrestling all the time. But
to quote Marilyn Monroe, the beautiful people, it's all relative to the size of your steeple. Hang on, that's not Marilyn. That's the wrong Marilyn.
No, that's what I was talking about. That's exactly. So aside from Marilyn Monroe and the beautiful people, which I have Madison Rain feud, that's a whole nother thing.
Mm-hmm.
She was my first match.
Nice. First
match. We'll have that. We can talk about that later. But I got into OVW, our first night there, I called Steve when I left and I was like, hey, we're working for OVW now. Like, and to his credit, he's like, great. Sounds good. So we went to TV, and the first night we didn't really know what to do. And as like from my comedy club background, I saw people weren't being seated. So I was like, oh, that's where we can help. We can help seating, because seating is important. So you can get people on hard cam so the arena looks good and full. And seating is important in comedy because you don't want a whole room full of people in the back. So I was like, I'll help with seating. By the end of the night, I looked at him and was like, we never do seating again. I had so many open mouth with so many missing teeth yelling at me. I had so many people like, I've been here for 45 years. I ain't going nowhere. Like, we haven't even been open that long. So I was looking at us like, Steve, we don't seat anymore. Next week, we find something different. Mm. And so we kind of kept ourselves around backstage, saw what we could fill in. And then we started noticing that there were no like social media videos. We had no content other than posters once in a while. And we noticed that the women's division was being underserved. So we're like, let's start there. So we started filming on our phones. I bought a rig on Amazon, and we started filming on like these pre-tapes with ladies backstage and building the feud for the next pay-per-view. It was Jay Lee, Callie, Brittany Lawson, and I think the other lady's name was Aaron. And man, I would argue by the time we got to the pay-per-view, because the videos we built for them, it was probably one of the hottest feuds or one that had the most steam, because they weren't doing anything with them. I was like, yeah, go have fun, do what you want. So we had kind of carte blanche. I was like, well, if you're going to let me do what I want, I'm going to do what I want. We did, Steve's Jay Lee's bag boy at one point. She pushed down a cameraman. We did the spot where Jay Lee and Steve got in the car, and then Callie snuck up behind the back seat. And you saw she was back there all along, and then jumped Jay Lee from behind. Like, we did a lot of silly stuff. We even dropped the line of the mistake, and this is early on writing, mistakes were made. She said, the mistake you made was that you left me breathing. That was the one thing I regret from the entire feud, because those ladies didn't quite have that level of feud.
Oh.
But
it was high hopes and high ambition. That's all you can ask for, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Callie, and that's the thing. I think we had Lauren Person deliver it, because Callie is one of those people, again, we took her under our wing, and Callie really developed as a comedy character, which was beautiful. Like, she loved working with us, and eventually she asked me to be her manager. So she was a comedy character, then decided to run for president, then asked me to be her campaign manager, which made me her wrestling manager. So that was another escalation of those things. Like, we were doing backstage pre-tapes with everybody then. Everybody saw what we did for the women's division. So more people were like, can we do something? I got an idea. And that's why we started working with Justin and Tony, everybody. And that's how I became a manager, which was fantastic. I really enjoyed that role. I thought I was good at it. Choked a lady on some ropes once. That was interesting. But Sarah the Rebel, fantastic lady, love her to death. I think she retired from wrestling now, she's doing something else, but she was fantastic. But then that ends up, because we did all those backstage pre-tapes, there's a guy, the glue of OVW, I'll put him over, Adam Revolver, who the entire thing would fall apart without. I don't know if you know much about Adam.
Only through bits I've seen on OVW, so I'm hoping you can fill me a bit more about his involvement behind the scenes as well.
Adam was on the writing team with all of us, but he's also the guy who compiles everything and kind of keeps, when we're on the writing team, we have a tendency, like it's a bowling thing, to wind our arms up, like we're doing the Dusty Rhodes elbow and just throw the bowling ball. And he is the one who puts up the garters, like, no, can't do that. That's not right. Let's keep it here. And he's the guy who, gets all the run sheets together. He's the main agent backstage. Like, when the show is about to go on, he's the one going to every single person going over the match. Like, hey, do you know the business? Do you know what you're doing? Do you know why this is happening? Do you understand this? Do you know what your character's doing? The place would fall apart without Adam. And he helps bring the new talent as well. Like, he's kind of that, we get a bunch of emails. some of them are people like me. They're like, I want to come in and fight. I feel like I could do it. And he keeps those. But then there's some that are really talented, like Layla Gray and Luke Curtis, who just started coming in. You know, they reached out to him and he fielded it and was like, oh, yeah, these guys would be great. They've been a great addition. Place would fall apart with that, Adam. But he used to do the pre-tapes and he hated it because he had so much other stuff to do, like for TV. And then one day we were on the writing meeting and said something about because we were doing the backstage stuff. And he's like, why don't we have the social media guys take over the pre-tapes for TV? And I was like, yeah, sure. We can do your job, Adam. He goes, great. Fantastic. And then on TV that week, we thought he was kidding, but he came to me and goes, all right, guys, here's the run sheet for the pre-tapes we need. Here's the camera. Go get them. Okay.
What?
And we've been. Yeah, well, yeah. Well, I took that as a compliment, though, because Adam is not someone who would just let it happen poorly. Mm-hmm. So he might have been brash and abrupt about it and very casual about it. But yeah, I took it as a huge compliment because he means we were doing good enough that he trusted us with TV. And we've been doing it ever since then. So.
And what I love about your story is, and it's one that even to this day, like, because I get messages from people saying, like, how do I get involved in, how do I do the things that you do? I want to do those things. And so much of it is just taking initiative. So much of it is just going, okay, well, I want to do podcasts. I want to do channel. Well, just start. I want to go work for this wrestling promotion. Well, reach out and see, and be willing to do anything and everything and do whatever. It's a weird one to explain because it's hard to teach people initiative. Because you've either got initiative or you haven't.
Well, I think a lot of people, and it's what, because people ask us, like, well, you know, because we get the students, you know, what can I do to do more? What can I do? And I'm like, well, I mean, don't wait to be asked. Like, no one asked us to start doing backstage stuff. We just saw that it could be done. I mean, no one asked us to start doing that. And no one, I mean, Adam asked us to do the backstage pre-tapes, but we started doing it. Callie asked me to be her manager. I mean, you don't always wait to be asked. You just kind of put yourself in a situation that it happens.
I think a lot of people wait to be asked to do stuff.
Yeah.
And the true secret in the sauce is just if you've got an idea for something, just go in and push for it initiative is what it is. I won't out who they are, but somebody sent me a message about 4 months ago, and they said I'd love to do more radio work. Can I send you a demo for you to have a look at? And I was like, yeah, happy to help. And yeah. I get an email from them probably once a month saying, I haven't done it yet because this has happened and this has happened. And it's just the point where I'm going, okay, but really I want to put, look, it sounds really harsh, but I don't care because this is for you. This is for your benefit. Like it doesn't change my day if you haven't sent it me. It affects yours. So maybe they're listening. Exactly. If so, that's just so you know, I do care, but I also don't care.
Because you're like, I'll make time to do it. And then like this, like, they're like, oh, well, Tim was like, I wasn't asking you for it. I mean, you're not inconveniencing me. You're just
no, but it would behoove you to do it so I can help you. But, you know, I can't until you do. So it's initiative. Initiative is the way. And this leads to you now in your position as a commentator, which, you know, marrying your love of hosting and wrestling. Like when you were asked to do that gig for the first time, like where were you? What was the reaction to doing it? And all of that stuff.
It's a perfect segue. So I had actually, you know, Al is a co-owner in Collar and Elbow. I was looking to do a Cultaholic sort of thing for Collar and Elbow and do lists. I was going to do like a 10 list thing. So I made a demo for Al and for Rod. I'm just going to shout out, I love you, Rod. Rod is one of the main owner of Collar and Elbow, I guess, or the feet under the company. Dude is one of the coolest people around. He's like the Big Lebowski if he had a lot more ambition and drive. He's the coolest dude. But so I did a pitch video for that. Like, you know, I did the list. It was and Al, I think, saw that and liked me on camera. And that turned into because we were doing commentary for the dark matches. And then Al came up to us backstage afterwards. And he's like, look, Brian, Steve, you guys can't do commentary anymore. I'm like, what? Why? Because I'm going to give you your own show. Open with that, man. Open with that. So then we did a Overdrive, which the best wrestling show that ran for 70 episodes of all time. That was, I'm very proud of that show. That's the thing I can say we did. We put out, and it's a product that I am very, very, very proud of. We wanted to make it like the Super Mario show, the Lou Albano show, where we did skit and then match, you know? And I think we, by the fifth episode, we just started getting really weird. I think I was naked in Al Snow's house by the fifth episode. We did a throwback to the 1920s where like we had cigarettes and martinis and we were talking like this. And it was such a weird show, but it was brilliant. I loved it. And we got through 70 episodes, like a full year. And then the new owners came in and wanted to do something different. But I know Al saw in that, Steve and I had the When the Red Light's On Just Go to us at that point. And our current commentator, Gilbert Corsi, was on his way out. Like, there's just kind of a mutual, I'm done now, right before we went back to live shows, because it's during the pandemic when we couldn't do live shows. So we have two people that have a lot of radio experience, I think, might have been expecting the gig. And with all due respect, probably had a more of a claim to it, because they had a lot more years in it. They had a lot more polish. And because it's AJ McKay and Eric Cornish, are very talented, our ring announcers now. Those guys have years of broadcast experience, and they're very talented. They're very invaluable at OVW. So I think everyone was a little shocked when Al put me and Steve on the desk. Again, because we did Overdrive, and that was a comedy show. It was fun, and we kind of told him, like, Al, we're not going to go out there and be somebody different. I'm not going to be, like, a serious guy now. Like, that won't work. It'll be a lie, and everybody will know it. So, I knew who you were when I put you out there. So while we were all very shocked that they didn't put the polish guys with experience out there, we went out there and made the best of it. And I think it worked because we came back. We weren't even at Davis Arena at first. We were at a smaller arena in Jeffersonville, Indiana, because we couldn't run in Kentucky. So it was a smaller setting. I can say it now because I think we're far enough out. We were there with Shannon and the dude. We'd sneak a beer here and there at the desk. Just the AC didn't work, and we earned it. but it was very cool, because it was almost like a humble beginning. It's like we're working a smaller show, we're working a small arena as our first commentaries, and then we got to come back to sold out Davis Arena for our first night doing commentary at Davis Arena. It was just such a come up moment. It felt like a story mode. I was backstage, then I got a show, then I upgraded and became a commentator. But it was a small venue. And then I got the bigger sold out Davis Arena venue. And then that was the end of story mode, apparently. So I've just been riding that in for a while. Oh. It's like No Mercy when you roll over to the next year. It just kind of continues on.
Yeah, you're just kind of like defending the title for it.
Yeah.
Why do you think Al chose you two?
I've asked myself that many a sleepless night, Tom. I think we were really lucky. I got to reword that, since we're not really lucky to have a pandemic. We were lucky during the pandemic to be able to work with Al in a very unique way. Because even for main TV, it became me, Steve, and Gilbert, and Man Beast, Ted McNaylor. We would do a four-way Zoom call. And we would incorporate matches and pitches. That's how my feud with Madison Rain started, was on that show. So that was very uniquely produced, because we were all in the same arena, but we're all in four different rooms. And I was trying to communicate with all of us. And then Overdrive clearly was just me, Steve, our cameraman, Daniel, which we called Mary at the time. That was its ongoing story. His entire family got killed on Overdrive, which is great that I can say that. We had a murderous guy. We had a 7-foot murderer on Overdrive. It was fantastic. Like, you don't get that, but anyway. So I think working in all these unique experiences, and just he's got to work with us in such an intimate setting, just the four of us, and we would get to actually banter and work it out and figure out where we wanted to go. And he saw the ups and the highs and lows. They say, I've read somewhere before, that over 70% of marriages start in the workplace, because you see the best and worst of somebody. You can see how they are when everything's going right. You can see how they are when everything's going wrong. And I think Al was able to see with Steve and I how we react when everything went great and then how it went poorly. So I think he knew whatever situation he would put us in, that we could handle it. And I think a big thing with Steve and I that a lot of people aren't going to be able to ever get is we came into this business as buddies. And they say you can make money or you can make friends in wrestling. And I think Steve and I are very blessed that we came in together already as really good friends, because I mean, like, I can trust him no matter what. I know I have that one. And that's a big win in wrestling, because not everybody can say that, because there's a lot of looking over your shoulders, a lot of worrying about your spot. And that doesn't really, if Steve and I quit doing commentary tomorrow, we're still going to be best buddies. We're still pretty much going to do commentary when we hang out. You know what I mean? And there is a strength and a confidence to that, that I think a lot of people wouldn't have. They're always worried this guy next to me is going to try to do better. Or he's going to try to replace me with somebody he likes working with better. I don't have that concern. I don't think Al does either for us.
That's lovely to hear. Making money and making friends.
Yeah.
Not many get to do both. Not many get to do both.
No, man, they really don't. And I think we've been really lucky too. Like I will say, because I don't think you've heard me say Tony Gunn a few times. We have what we like to call our super group. It is a group of me and Steve and his wife and my wife, Tony and his wife and a couple others. It's couples that actually get along, all of us together. It's a group of 10 of us that we've been so lucky to find that we can actually all interact. Like if I end up with whoever else's wife just talking to them somewhere, I can talk to them. If I end up with this dude over here, I can talk to them. And I think everyone has that exchange. And that all came from wrestling. So Steve and I came in as buddies, and that helps us from the rapport standpoint, from a trust standpoint. But wrestling's been very, very generous to me as far as what it's offered to me on a deeper spiritual level as well. And I get a communal level. Is that a word?
Yeah, a community. Yeah, community. I think communal is a word. If it's not, we've created it.
Yeah, it feels good.
Feels right in my mouth. That's good. That's good. We're going to get to your third and final match in just a few moments. Before we do, I like to surprise people with this. It's a nice little question. Oh, it's all right. It's nothing evil, I promise. Because it's nice to get the first reaction from people as to what they and how they answer it. As well as taking three wrestling matches, I'm also going to let you take a movie, an album, and a luxury item. So a luxury item can be a bit of tech. It can be something with sentimental value. It can be something useful. It can be a whole number of things. We'll touch on that in a second. But a movie, if I was to say to you, Brian, you could take a movie with you, what is the first movie that springs to mind that you would want to take?
Oh, man, it's not a right or wrong answer, but I'm going to get it wrong. So I'm going to think like later, I'm going to like message you right as soon as we're done. Like, hey, can I change that? Can we do like an after audio thing?
Just a little guy copy, like record. Send me a voice memo. We'll add it in.
Yeah. But from my gut, and it's just the first thing that popped in my head, and maybe because we're talking about the match I'm about to bring up and the time period and everything, but basketball would go with me.
So this was like Matt and Trey at the height of their South Park power.
Right? It was something totally movie. Unique and different that I'd seen in a movie. And I think it's very quotable. And I got to say, I would stray away from emotional things taken on or sentimental things on a desert island with me, because I don't want to really fully think of everything I'm lost. I think the things I'd be bringing with me would be for escapism. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't want to bring my wedding tape, because then I would just miss my wife. So that would be, you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to do one of those sorts of things. You don't want to bring your favorite movie with your kid, because then you're just like, man, I can't see my kid. So I will go with basketball, because it's nice and safe, and I can laugh about it and escape from the tortures of this desert island.
How about an album, sir?
Album? I think we're going to have to go Bleed American, Jimmy Eat World. It's not even something I listen to all the time, but it's one I can pop in anytime. And like, they're from beginning to end, it's just bangers. It's such a good album. And it holds a special place in my heart for the time period I heard it and everything, too. It just barely beats out Enema of the State, because I would want a little bit of emotional depth in my music. So that's why I'm going Bleed American over Enema of the State. But this is top to bottom, man. Are you a Jimmy Eat World fan?
I know of them. I don't know enough about them to... They did Take Some Time.
Yeah. Yes.
It was in here. The one that Kelly Clarkson ripped off a few years ago.
That was a really good song, Tom. You did really well.
Thanks, mate. I thought I sounded just like... I was just like the Jimmy Eat World.
You ate
the whole bloody world. how about a luxury item, man? What would you like to take with you as a luxury item?
I mean, I feel like luxury is relative. So, I mean, it just depends on... I wouldn't want a foot bath. That doesn't really add up to me. My phone would be nice so I could stay in contact and maybe... get to the authorities to get saved. Yeah. But I feel like that's a cop-out answer.
That is a cop-out answer. I don't know if I can let you take your phone.
You know what? I'm gonna go massage chair with because
nice.
we sprung for the expensive membership at the gym, because we got our New Year's resolution. We're trying to stick to it. But part of that was, well, we'll pay the extra few bucks and get access to the massage chairs. And man, you've seen Adam's Family? Mm-hmm. Remember when Uncle Fester sat in his bed and he just sunk into it?
Yeah.
That's what these chairs, that's what they are, man. I just go into them in my arms and legs just get sucked into this thing, and it's glorious. And I feel like I'm being rubbed by like a million ants at once, and it's fantastic.
See, I would be tempted just to use the gym just for the massage chair.
There are some people that do.
Yeah.
Our first day there, I kid you not, I saw a dude come in, didn't look at the gym at all, took the massage chair number, went straight to the chairs. Then I literally saw him leave. So you're 110% right. That's are people that are like, I'm just in this for the chair. It's cheaper.
That's my hero. That's my hero right there. He's in it for the chair. What a guy.
It's cheaper than trying to get massages, man. It's so much cheaper.
Let's get on to your third and final match then. So we had a belter where OVW was represented on the road. We had Brock Lesnar versus John Cena from SummerSlam, a decimation on that part. What was your third and final match going to be, Ryan?
So this one, it does have a little more emotional depth to it. This one people can actually find a lot easier. Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels, Mania, Tyson as the enforcer.
Tyson hit Austin.
It's Tyson.
That was that punch at the end was a standout moment to me. So where was so at this point? So you discovered wrestling at this point. You'd been switched on to it. Playing wrestling games at this point. But why this match in particular over all the other matches that you could have chose at this time frame? Why this one in particular?
It was my first main event. Is the easiest thing I can say. Because the whole, like, I understood the levity of it, even as a young child, and how big of a celebrity Mike Tyson was. So I understood the cultural relevance of it too. And just, it was such for me, like, at least I was at the perfect age, but that every match that night, everything just built and built and everything. I was like, man, I am a wrestling fan now. And they're like, well, great. Here's a good main event. I was like, whoo, it was just the right thing at the right time. Like when you get just enough room left in you for dessert at dinner, and then they're like, here's your favorite dessert. You're like, oh, it could not be better. And it just, everything coalesced in this beautiful moment at the end where I just kind of, I wasn't aware of this dingy house around me anymore. I was totally there. I was watching Austin go for his dream, the sweaty bald man beating the snot out of this pompous long-haired guy with really cool wrestling tights. Those were, if you remember, he had the hearts with the X's over him on that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then you had Tyson, who even as a kid, I'm like, he's going to get involved, right? He's got to do something. Like, I knew nothing about the business or writing or anything, but I'm like, he's got to get involved, right? He's there. He's Mike Tyson. He's going to do something. So it's something about all of it in that moment felt so magical to me. And I guess even to this day, even though I know there have been better work rate matches or better whatevers, that main event to me still just put against anything else. Like, it was magical. I don't care. That was the one. The next night, it was the reign of Stone Cold started. I mean, it was something about it, man. Again, it's a personal thing. It was the time of my life. It was where my brain was in that moment. It was the endorphin rushes that were specific to that match that I can't tell you. I know, again, there are better matches, but not to me. That was it. That was because I can rewatch that and know, like, that's the moment I became a really big part of who I am. You know, there's not, I think that's something wrestling offers that some things don't, is that I can look back and say, that's where this chunk of me came from. That moment, that match is where this part of me came from.
I think it's there's an extra special feeling about it when you go sort of behind the scenes on it and you realize that Shawn Michaels was like on like 5% stamina at this point. Like, he'd worked for years and his back has been hurt back in January, and he just had just enough energy to get through this match. And it means even more the fact that this match was still very, very good. Even with Michaels injured going into it, like, he put in a career performance.
Like, I can still vividly see in my mind's eye where he's approaching Mike Tyson, holding his back. Like you're saying, he's barely able to even get over there, but holding his back and still taking that punch because he knew he had to tell the full story all the way through. I think looking back on, yeah, he probably lessened some of the stuff he would have done in that match because he didn't have to do as much because he was a despicable heel at the time and he knew how to tell the story. But I think that was a big part of it too. I'm like, this guy's such a jerk. I know he's good at what he does. And even as a kid, I'm like, I know he's good at what he does, but he's being a jerk right now. He could be working harder. Like, hook, line, and sinker, man, all of it. And I think, even like you said, working with a half-empty gas tank and being able to put out something that iconic, he probably knew it was going to affect your people. I don't think he knows the depth of, like I said, that a part of me was born that day because of what those two guys did.
We had another iconic Steve Austin moment just this weekend gone. So it's funny that we end on Steve Austin. Austin faced Kevin Owens, his first match since 2003. What were your thoughts as an Austin fan drinking the in-ring return of Steve Austin in from WrestleMania?
So he should always be drinking Miller Lite or Bud Light. He shouldn't be drinking Tall Boys. That takes away from the visual. I need to see his hand wrap around the can completely. It can't hang out below. I get it, though. It's branding. I understand that. But, man, he looked good. I didn't have an issue with it at all. I'm like, that's Stone Cold stomping a mud hole in somebody. And he took a suplex on the outside, a 56-year-old man. Yes, absolutely. I think he did a fantastic job. And the crowd ate up every bit of it. And I don't think there's really much more you can ask for out of that.
No, not at all. We talk as well about sort of brave booking decisions, because that was kind of the John Cena Brock Lesnar match. We talked about that. This one was the fact that you didn't announce that Austin was going to wrestle because you didn't want to like put any pressure on it. So
yeah,
but then going into it, the idea of being like the Kevin Owens show is the main event of WrestleMania Night One, that's a weird choice. If nothing physical happens, that's so like a lot of bravery in booking like that. Knowing, yeah, but then still knowing what we got, and I was thoroughly sports entertained by it.
Well, right, and I think they're getting better at, they know people know what they're expecting. You know, they know what people are expecting. Like with Cody Rhodes, they didn't ever need to say Cody Rhodes because out there enough, they're like, we can just milk it. I think AEW did the same thing with, you know, Daniel Bryan, CM Punk. They were great about, they're obviously coming. We don't need to tell you. We'll just let you buy your tickets and let you get excited. I think WWE is doing a really good job about that. So with the KO show, yeah, I think he knew, because there was all the rumors about matches, you knew there was going to be something at least longevity wise and physical. So even if it wasn't a match, it could be construed as a match. Because at the end of the day, and it's the Al Snow and me, a match is just something you say you're having. It's a piece of paper, it's predetermined, blah, 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 whatever. You know, Stone Cold comes out and fights somebody for 15 minutes. I'm still happy with that. You don't have to call it a match. I don't have to hear 1, 2, 3, as long as you got a good closing spot. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But it was a nice touch, and it was very brave of them to go for it. It was a little quick how it happened. He's like, I challenge you to a match. All right. Boom. It's a match now. Like, I would have liked a little more, like, you know, chutzpah and drama put into it. But at the same time, like, you're right. I think it would have put too much pressure on it. The way it was done fun.
Absolutely.
I am so grateful the What Chan didn't come back. That was my one big fear.
It teased it a little bit.
And then if he does it full bore one more time, it's another 10 years before we lose it again.
Yeah, I think he knew that as well. He knew the power that he had. His appearance on Night 2 was a wonderful surprise. I think it's weird because despite the fact that like Vince McMahon was in the ring with Austin Theory, I remember thinking, is Austin still around tonight? Is he there? But then a lot of people I spoke to went, didn't even think about Austin coming out. Didn't even think about it. And then so when he did, it was even better. And he hit the greatest stunner of all time on Vince McMahon.
Oh, God. Speaking of full bore and power, shirtless Vince McMahon at almost 90 years old.
God, ooh. Yeah. Jeez. I want to look that good at his age. God.
Right?
I want to look that good now, actually.
It still looks like he can. Come on, you're border control Campbell. Nobody can hold a candle to you. The man still looks like he could bite through chains. I think he still does that. And somehow that makes his arms stronger.
It was that, amazing.
So I knew for some reason I felt it again. Maybe it's the attitude era. I felt it. I was like, this would be, hold on, they're not gonna bring Austin out, are they? It's like, baby, they're about to bring Austin next. Again, my beautiful wife's right there next to me. Was like, they're gonna bring Austin out. It's gonna happen. She's like, what? Why? And then there it is. See? Yeah. I know things.
I know things.
But I guess it was my assumption that Vince isn't gonna take his shirt off now unless Stone Cold is involved. Or under, it'd be someone he trusts. He's not going to do it with anybody in the new breed of people. You know what I mean? It's going to be somebody from the old school that he trusts, even if it's the ugliest. I thought he died. That was a terrible stunner, man.
Do you know what? I'm glad that I'm chatting with you today for many reasons, but one in particular because I'd like to think that you also appreciated the man who deserves his flowers for that bit as well is Michael Cole, because Michael Cole, God love him. When that boot went in and Vince buckled and then staggered backwards, Michael Cole earned his flowers when he went, oh, Vince is trying to get away. Like, God love you, Michael Cole. That's why you're the MVP. That's why you're the man.
Yeah, no, again, because he had to call what was happening in front of him. He couldn't call what – that's the thing. Al tells me all the time, you can't call what's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. You got to call what happens. And good on him for being like, there's no, I don't know if I can curse on here. There's no effing way I'm going to bury the boss. You know,
no, absolutely not.
In making that decision. Because he could have easily been like, look at that 9-year-old man crumbling like a stack of bricks. And he would have been justified. Everyone home would be like, yep. But he didn't. He protected the boss. And that's why Michael Cole is Michael Cole.
Absolutely.
I would have totally still called Al Snow old in that moment. If Al got kicked in the stomach and fell back like that, like, oh, look at that old bitch. Wow, that's terrible.
You wouldn't then, you may not have worked for OVW ever again, I'm sure.
Man, I feel like, I don't know. He's let me get away with quite a bit of stuff.
If you want to hear the dulcet tones, you can do on OVW. You've got, once again, the shows are back up and running. Crowds are back. This is going out the day after we record it. So going out on the 6th of April. So what's on the docket for OVW in the weeks to come?
We're on Fight TV every single Thursday. That's our biggest global partner right now. We did just get on YouTube TV on the Fight Network there, not to be confused with Fight TV, spelled totally different. But we're doing that every single Thursday. And then on April 30th, we got Derby City Destruction coming up. It's the next OVW pay-per-view is going to be on Fight. There are some rumors of things I've been hearing, some big names that might be coming in. I mean, obviously, we got Mahab Ali Shira as the National Heavyweight Champion. He can't just fight a nobody, and Jesse Godders can't challenge for 60 days. I mean, I'm saying in Shira's video congratulating for the title, you saw Kurt Angle, you saw Jeff Jarrett, I mean, you saw James Storm. You never know who's going to pop up in OVW, Tom.
Absolutely not. Yeah. If people want to keep up to speed with it, as well as on Fight and stuff, can we find you and OVW online? Do all the plugs, sir.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Instagram, that's a whole different thing. That's embarrassing. It got hacked. We lost our Instagram. That sucks.
That happens.
Don't really have a segue out of that. But we got our Facebook and Twitter active. Almost 100,000 followers on those two combined. You can always find us on there. I think it's at OB Wrestling. And on YouTube, you can catch our weekly episodes if you don't have access to Fight or Fight Network or anything like that for some reason. YouTube, you can follow OVW Wrestling and then OVW Weekend to catch our 1-hour episode each week.
And where can we find you, Brian?
Me? Oh, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at Brian Kennison with the Y, not an I, in the Brian, because I have some time value. See, it's an options thing. It's a power move.
I like it a lot. And this I've liked a lot as well. Brian, we spent long enough trying to get this together. It has been a deep joy to spend the last hour chatting wrestling and nonsense with you. And I hope we can find an awful excuse to do it again, or maybe in the UK. When you finally get over here.
Next one in person, over a couple of brews.
That'd be nice.
I'm excited about that.
But not in Brighton, though. Don't go to Brighton. It's too far.
Not Brighton or Leeds, as I understand.
Leeds is all... I don't mind Leeds because it's closer to me. Brighton's too far.
Honestly, I think we have to go to Leeds to get a bumper sticker of some sort. It's just for our dog. So
I went to Leeds and all I got was carjacked. Yeah, that's...
that's the one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.